makes a move around McCarron to center. Driving to the Nashville line. Left wing. Nikita Zadorov shoots. He scores! The big man goes coast to coast! And Rogers Arena is shaking! 1-0 Canucks! 3:11 into the third!
8:01 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for?
Kintec, that's what you're waiting for.
Oh, Jamie Dodd did it so much better than you.
Really?
When we were working together. Do you remember that, A-Dog? How well he'd nail the Kintec?
It gave me chills, actually.
Yeah, it was one of those goosebumps moments. Yeah,
I thought about it for a few days afterwards.
Like all of a sudden, U2 would start playing.
Yeah.
Where the streets have no name.
Yeah, just a single tear rolls down my cheek.
It was just perfection.
We got some kind of breaking news as well, which is appropriate since we have Dodd coming up in a second.
Okay.
Oh, you want me to read it?
Well, yeah. I don't have it.
You were just looking at your phone. I sent it to you.
You didn't send me anything. Oh, I was looking at my phone because you were waving your phone in the air.
Okay, well,
we got
the Norris finalists. Unsurprisingly.
Well, I don't have it. So.
Unsurprisingly, Quinn Hughes, Roman Josi, Cale Makar are your Norris finalists. Breaking news.
He's not the best in the business for nothing,
That's
folks.
That's why I'm here.
How about you don't wave the phone at me and you read the information on the phone?
All right, come on. You're going to lose your voice even more if you keep yelling.
But I'm so excited.
I know.
Excitable. Let's go to the phone lines now. Jamie Dodd joins us on the Halford & Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Jamie? How are you?
I'm great. A pleasure to step into the well-oiled machine that is Halford & Bruff in
let
the
me tell
morning.
You, buddy. It is like clockwork in here, let me tell you. I'm going to start with the goal call that was not challenged last night. If you're Rick Tocchet, are you challenging the 1-1 goal?
So I actually think he probably made the right decision. And I know because of what had happened in the Florida-Tampa game, right, that there was this idea that, you know, oh, if there's any contact at all, they'll probably overturn it. They're protecting the goalie so much. But this is a different situation. Once the puck is loose in the crease, right, I think it becomes very, very different in the NHL's eyes. And, you know, I guess the standard is incidental versus other than incidental. And watching the replays, I don't see that smoking gun from Gustav Nyquist, right, where he's going in and just, you know, wildly jabbing his stick at Archer Shelov's and that's pushing the puck in. So I think the fact that it was called a goal on the ice and, you know, given how hard, like, the standard to overturn a call, I think it would have been pretty slim chances that they see more of an incidental contact there and overturn it. So given the moment, and as Rick Tocchet said after the game, look, we're still tied. We don't want to go back on the penalty kill. We still have every chance to win the game. I think he actually probably made the right decision.
Is your show with Drance today just going to be, like, defining incidental? Like going to the dictionary definition of
3 hours
of incidental? Because Drance is already on Twitter, like, fighting with everyone over incidental and what's other than incidental in the rule book, which is hilarious. You know, any other thoughts on last night's game? Like, what would you say was the reason that this series is going six?
That's a tough one. I mean, I actually thought that was probably the best game that the Canucks have played this series. I think it was probably the first game where both teams are pretty happy with the way they played throughout the game. This series has been really, really tight. You know, a ton of one-goal games. The only exception, that game two loss for the Canucks in game two. And I think it probably came down to UC Saros making some really big saves, right? Like, you think about Brock Besser stopped in close. He had some other, he gets the Elias Pettersson shot off his mask on a 2-on-1 there. And I thought there were moments last night where Saros looked not great, right? But the Canucks didn't punish him. And then he made the saves that he needed to make. Now, that doesn't mean that the Canucks were overwhelming or they got goalied necessarily or anything like that. But it kind of came down to, you know, the Preds snuck one through on a screen, and the Canucks just weren't able to do that. I don't think that's an inherent flaw in how the Canucks were playing last night. That's just a thing that happens. I guess the other thing I would point to is the Canucks' power play, looking just absolutely dismal, disorganized when they got opportunities and key moments, and then obviously the Preds eventually, finally make a power play count for them. So those would probably be the two things that I point to.
When the Canucks practice tomorrow, assuming they will practice tomorrow in Nashville ahead of Friday's Game 7, do you think we might see significant changes to the forward lines?
I would be a little surprised if we do, because Rick Tocchet has been pretty adamant, really from the moment this series began, that there's not a lot that the Canucks need to adjust tactically or in their line configurations. They just need to execute better, right? And if he didn't change things up after, you know, a loss in Game 2, after some fairly concerning efforts on the road in Nashville, despite them getting the win, you know, again, I think they played maybe their best game of the series last night. So I don't see necessarily a lot of reason for him to break from what he's been saying and go change things up. I mean, the Miller line had another really, really good game, right? Like, they have those shifts out there where you just feel like they're going to score eventually. And I thought the Lindholm line was pretty good again. I thought there were signs of progress from the Pettersson line. So I think if you're Rick Tocchet, like, you stick to what you've been preaching, you stick to your guns, you keep this group together. I'm not sure there's another more obvious configuration out there that's going to get you better results.
So the Lotto line was reunited in bits and pieces last night, and I thought it looked pretty good. Now, it was only a two-minute sample size, according to Natural Stat Trick, but 3 shots, 4-0 against in a series where the Canucks have struggled to get 20 shots in a game. Like, the most they've had is 21. Do you think he's at least considering that?
I mean, it's probably something he's thinking about, but I mean, even go back to when Tocchet put the Lotto line together for a stretch of games, right? And they had that incredible first game, and Rick Tocchet was pretty forceful after it, right? Like, hey, this is not going to be a permanent thing. It's not really my preference. I don't love to load up one line. Like, he's never really been in love with the idea, even when he put them together in the middle of the season with playing the Lotto line. And since then, it's been, you know, really, really rarely deployed. I don't know that he's started a game with it really since January. I think more likely is that we see it in spots, right? Whether it's to boost Elias Pettersson's minutes because you're trying to keep Nils Höglander's ice time down and you're looking for other spots to get Pettersson out there, whether it's because you're trailing and you're chasing the game and you need it. I think it's an option he can go to during games, but I think he likes the idea of, you know, Miller, Lindholm, Pettersson down the middle. Now, Pettersson needs to start playing a lot better, obviously. And I thought he took some baby steps last night, but he needs to start playing a lot better to make that a reality. But I think that's what Tocchet wants. And, you know, they're still up. They're still up in the series. So just based on what Rick Tocchet's had to say during this series, I don't think he's going to be too prone to make some big moves in the lineup.
Do you think Tocchet is pretty happy with how the series is right now?
I mean, I think he probably loves that it's like, I called it a rock fight on my show yesterday. Like, this is a defensive, physical series. I'm sure Rick Tocchet loves that element of things. I think he would probably love for his team to be controlling play a little bit more consistently, to be generating more shots. But, you know, until that moment last night, they've been excellent on the penalty kill. They've been really good in the defensive zone, right? Limiting some of those dangerous chances. Nashville's had some moments off the rush, which is kind of their bread and butter, or one of their bread and butters. But, you know, the Canucks have been pretty good at limiting that even. So I think Rick Tocchet probably likes an awful lot of what he sees. And I think Rick Tocchet probably just loves really defensive, tight-checking, physical playoff series, right? I'm sure he would love to see more shots on net, but I don't get the sense that he has a big problem with the way the series is going either.
How do they get more shots on net? Like, who is calling for all the slap passes? Is that a coaching decision or is that the players?
I think that's partly a coaching decision, right? Because you listen, I think, and look, I'm not an X's and O's genius or anything here, but like when he talks about, you know, shooting for that second stick, right? Like, don't shoot it right at the net because that's where the screen is. There's got to be someone in front, and then there's a stick that you're looking for a deflection or a slap pass. I think that's part of the strategy, right? That's part of the reaction to Nashville's fronting and Nashville's commitment to blocking shots. And so, like, the shots on net, it stands out. Now, I will say, and I think Shorty even commented on it on the broadcast last night, like, first shot, or what looked like the first shot of the game for the Canucks, Teddy Bluger gets a wrist shot on. It goes up for a moment, and then they take it away. And it's like, well, that looked like a shot on goal. So I do think there's some stinginess going on with how these are being scored. And then, you know, you look at natural stat trick. I think they had like 25, 26 scoring chances last night, right? So more than they had shots on net. I think there's an element here of maybe they're overthinking it a little bit with the slap passes, but I also don't look at last night and think like, oh, that was a punchless offensive performance. Like, I think they had their opportunities to score goals. They just didn't make the most of them. Yes, more shots on net. Maybe you need to tweak it a little bit to go away from the slap pass, but I also understand why they're doing that. I think it's part of how they're trying to avoid the shot blocking tendencies from the Preds.
Is part of all this, and if it comes down in a lot of cases to a lack of execution, is part of all this that the Canucks just don't have the wingers that they need, and that's why they were trying so hard to get one at the trade deadline?
I mean, if we're going into the offseason right now, right? Like, and I'm not saying they're going to lose this series, but just like imagine however the playoffs end going into the offseason, that's got to be priority number one, right? Just finding some more creativity. And I think Rick Tocchet, though, I think Rick Tocchet probably has an ideal way of playing offense, and that does involve a lot of, you know, deflections and screens and layered screens and from the point and all that. But I'm sure he would love to be able to build in a little bit more of that offensive creativity. But as you say, like, who are the players who can do that, right? And you look at, it's not just, you know, who's playing with Elias Pettersson, but even beyond Brock Besser and Connor Garland, who are the wingers that really have that element of, okay, they can keep up with high skill plays, they can make those east-west plays? They don't really have them. So I think, as you said, like, that explains why they were so interested in Jake Guentzel. He would have been an amazing fit for this team. I think they were hoping Elias Lindholm could have provided some of that on the wing in the top six, but I think that's a huge part of it, is there's only so many ways this team can successfully play. I think Rick Tocchet recognizes that. I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, we've seen the offensive focus from this team that we have.
One lineup change that won't be happening is Vasily Podkolzin, because the Canucks just announced that general manager Patrick Helvin has assigned Vasily Podkolzin to Abbotsford. That actually came down 30 seconds ago. So there's some more news there. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd joins us here now. I've seen a few people text in, and I'm not sure I agree with it, but I want to put it out into the ether anyway, that part of this, I mean, record low shot total from the Canucks. Again, we've mentioned it a few times, but it's 92 through five games. It's the second lowest total through five games in NHL history. May have something to do, either intentionally or just with the thought in the back of their mind, that they have their third string netminder playing in net. Do you have any, you know, do you lend credence to this thought process at all, or do you think it's just kind of like a theory that doesn't go anywhere?
I don't know. I mean, like, what did Artur Shelov do last night to, you know, make his team concerned, right? If anything, I thought he was playing with a lot of confidence, probably giving them a lot of confidence. They'd already picked up a win with him in the series. You know, I get that at some level, as much as you say, like, hey, we're not going to change the way we play no matter who's in net, that Thatcher Demko is such a rock back there that maybe he gives you that little bit of extra confidence. But again, I don't think they were playing, you know, hyper-conservatively last night or anything. I don't think they were, you know, declining to push the attack or anything because they were worried about odd man rushes going against Artur Shelov. I think Shelov was playing a really good game. I just think a lot of their shots missed the net. They tried a lot of slap passes that weren't there. They tried a lot of, you know, shoot wide for a deflection that didn't quite come off. I don't think that's because Artur Shelov isn't that. I think that's part of their game plan for attacking the Preds.
Okay, follow-up question. Would you consider starting Casey DeSmith in Game 6?
Ooh, that's a tough one. You know, though, I think the argument for starting Casey DeSmith would be that the Canucks, because it's kind of the high floor versus high ceiling thing, right? But, you know, I know Artur Shelov flashed the glove a little bit last night, but it wasn't as if those were like cross seam passes where he had to explode across the crease and, you know, reach the glove out and make this incredible save. He was still square to the shooter on those saves, not taking anything away. They were really nice. And I guess the argument for starting Casey DeSmith would be the Canucks have been really good at keeping shots to the outside, right? Making sure the goalie is set, not allowing that pre-shot movement from the Predators that Casey DeSmith could struggle with. Now, if you're asking me just subjectively who's looked better in their two starts, I'd probably say Artur Shelov. But I also understand that the Canucks, I think, probably have them ranked pretty similarly, right? I mean, that's just a guess on my part. I wouldn't have a problem with going to Casey DeSmith in Nashville. He won the last game he started there. I thought he looked really calm. But I also understand why you would roll with Archer Shelob. I do just think, like, the Canucks are playing a game that I think is tailored to how Casey DeSmith can have success right now, which is, you know, keep it really, really simple for the goalie. Don't demand too much of that really kind of athletic, dynamic stuff that Archer Shelob is more capable of.
You could make the argument that the best goaltending performance from the Canucks we've seen in this series was DeSmith, 29 saves, one goal allowed, yep, in game three in the first game in Nashville.
Yeah, 100%. And again, like, I think part of that was all credit to DeSmith, but you look at the saves he was making in that, and it was a lot, you know, from well outside, above the dots, on the walls, right? They tried a ton of those cross-team passes, but the Canucks broke them up. Like, they made the environment really straightforward in front of Casey DeSmith, and I think that's how you need to play in front of Casey DeSmith, right? If you're asking him to make these, like, really explosive, you know, impressive saves, like Thatcher Demko or even Artur Shelob are capable of, that's probably not going to turn out well for you. But when you keep it simple, he can make those saves. The Canucks have done a really good job of that. So I think it's an interesting discussion. I mean, we're going to have a lot of time to chew it over between now and game six on Friday. But I think the Canucks have every chance to win in Nashville, no matter who they start in net.
So overall, how are you feeling about the Canucks chances in this series? Still pretty good?
Yeah, I still feel pretty good. I mean, like, the games have been so close. I haven't seen anything that suggests to me, and I know they played, you could argue they played pretty poorly in both games in Nashville despite getting the win, but I haven't seen anything from Nashville that suggests that the Canucks are going to get, you know, rolled over in Nashville, right? Like, I think they should absolutely be in that one, and then you're coming, even if you lose, you're coming home with another chance to win it in game seven. So look, I don't think it's a guarantee. I don't think it's they're home free or anything, but they can absolutely win this. I think they're obviously still the favorites, right? Up 3-2. There's some things you'd love to see better. I mean, I'm shocked we haven't talked more about Elias Pettersson on this show, because, like, the series is sitting there for him, right? He had his opportunities last night where if he converts on a couple of those chances, you know, this series is done, and we're having a very different conversation about Elias Pettersson. So, like, I think it's there for them, and they just have to go out and earn it. They've shown that they're capable of doing that. They played really well last night for most of it, I thought. So I still like their chances. It's not a guarantee. Nashville's a good team. It's going to be hard fought, but yeah, they can absolutely still do this.
And you also have to point out the fact that in order for the Canucks to lose this series, they would have to suffer three losses in a row for the second time this year. Like, it's only ever happened once.
Yep. Right?
Like, I mean, that was one of the calling cards of the regular season, was they did such a good job of not losing consecutive games in a row. And it was just that four game stretch in late February, the only time they lost three in a row. I know the playoffs are an entirely different beast than the regular season, but there is something to be said for this team's ability to not lose multiple games in a row.
At this point, would we accept just a flash of skill by Petey that leads to one Canucks goal? Like a really nice play. Not necessarily like a super complete game where you're like, wow, he was driving the lines out there. But, you know, whether it's him setting up Mikheyev and Mikheyev actually scoring or him making a really nice play on the power play, just anything that leads to a goal, would we accept that?
Oh, I think everyone would accept that, right? Because, again, you look at last night, I think he flashed some high-skill plays, as you said. Like, unfortunately, they're going on to the stick of Ilya Mikheyev, and then it's into the crest of the goalie, right?
Well, that's my argument for the lotto line, by the way, right?
Yeah,
like let him – No. For the whole – it's funny because, like, right up until last night, I was like – I would almost, like, Halford would bring it up, and I would always be like, oh, God, like, come on, buddy. Like, this is like, you know, I don't know. Canucks form stuff, right? Like, this is just I felt like disdain for the suggestion. Like, it just seemed, I don't know, kind of just, I don't know, but after last night, I'm like, ah, man, I don't know, maybe Halford was onto something, because, like, if Petey is going to flash some skill, doesn't he need to flash it with someone who might actually finish off that flash?
It would be nice. Right? It would be nice. But I think, to your point of just, you know, having that moment, because I think you could look at it and say, like, yeah, probably territorially that line had the edge, right? You know, they had more scoring chances for than they did against when they were out there. But we're also talking about Elias Pettersson against Colton Sisson. So it's nice to see those baby steps, but it doesn't matter if you don't finish. It doesn't matter ultimately if you don't convert and you don't put a goal up on the board. And last night, I mean, that was a situation where we might be talking about the series being a wrap. We might be talking about a round one victory if one of those key moments does turn into a goal for Elias Pettersson. Now, I think my hesitation with the lotto line is that you're getting enough from Miller and Besser anyways, that I don't need, like, you don't need to put Pettersson there for them, right? So I think your best bet is still, okay, we're going to get offensive production from Miller and Besser. We're seeing those steps forward from Pettersson and Hoglander and Mikheyev, so we're just going to keep rolling with that, look for those situational moments to get Pettersson up on the lotto line. But I hear your point, too, right? Like, I mean, what's Mikheyev at now? One goal in 50 games? Something like that? How much can you reasonably expect from him in this moment?
Jamie, this was great, man. Thanks a lot for taking the time to do it. We really appreciate
it. Hold on. Before I go, am I crazy, or does A-Dog look a lot like Andrew Brunette?
I do.
Oh, my God. I kind of see it.
Let's see.
I kind of see it.
A little bit.
Yeah?
I do.
I kind of see it. Anyway, did you notice that at the Hollywood? Like, I've never seen A-Dog before.
No, I was watching the game last night. I almost texted A-Dog, actually. I was like, Andrew Brunette looks like your older cousin or something, or like your uncle.
Okay.
I was very struck by it. Anyways.
Well, maybe one day we'll meet and we'll have this little moment together. And
yeah.
Long-lost family members reuniting.
Well,
you know what? Now that I'm on the Google image search, can confirm. You guys look a lot alike. Okay. Andrew Brunette and Andrew Cole.
You could be like his nephew or something.
Cool. Did you play hockey too?
No.
Not at all. I tried.
Dodd, go back to bed for a bit.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
See you,
thanks,
buddy.
Jamie. Appreciate it. Jamie Dodd from Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650, here on Sportsnet 650.
I don't want to tease this too much or blow it out of proportion, but Laddie has an incredible what we learned. It is very.
Oh,
very,
this better be good.
Very,
man.
Very, very.
This
funny.
Will not be good.
There is audio associated with it. It is very funny.
Now, do we have time to do it right now?
Sure.
No. We're right up against.
Oh, you
want to
tease? You want to tease it?
Yeah. Well, we got to tease it. I need to remind everyone that although Laddie may be the best, what we learned, he will not win our contest. Our contest for what we learned is a $100 gift card to Bridge Brewing. You can buy some delicious primetime beer. $100 goes to the best what we learned. Again, Laddie is not eligible to win the prize. Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650. Hashtag it WWL and put a beer emoji into the text. It's important. It makes us understand that you want the beer. WWL 650-650 beer emoji. Send them in. Also, before we go to break, I need to tell you that Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Merit Kitchens. Canadian-made beauty, strength, and craftsmanship. Find an authorized designer near you today at MerrittKitchens.com. Your tailored kitchen awaits. We're going to come back. We're going to do our what we learns. Laddie's going to do his what we learned. We're going to turn it over to the humanoids for your what we learns. And then we're going to wrap up the show for a Wednesday. You're listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on the People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets. Weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now for my favorite part of the show. What did I say? Talk to the audience. Oh, God, this is always dead.
It's what we learn time. It's what we learn time. It's what we learn time. On the show.
8:29 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff of the Morning brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. It is what we learn time. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell and Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell and Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today. Okay. We got a lot to get to, actually. We have what we learns. The dogs both have what we learns. It's not very often that the dogs and only the dogs have what we learned, because you and I don't have them.
No.
And then I'm going to announce the winner of the $100 gift card to Bridge Brewing coming up in a bit. But first, now, I'm going to leave Laddie for second because we've been hyping his, so I want it to kind of be like the big grand finale.
Increase the tension.
That's right. Yeah, that means, hey, dog, your loser one gets to go first.
Mine's unbelievable. Unbelievable, even.
Oh, boy.
There's
a lot of B stuff, isn't there?
Yeah, the Arizona Diamondbacks, there was a delay of game, almost 2 hours to start their game yesterday because of a bunch of bees that collected on the netting behind what you call
home plate.
Home plate. Thank you. And so what they had to do is bring out this bee guy, a beekeeper, to spray the bees and get
them out
of
there.
And
this is where we play the Simpsons clip, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Hey, get off my sugar! Bad bees! Bad! Ow! Ow! Oh, they're defending themselves somehow.
Now the beekeeper actually said that as well.
Okay, now we do the bee mobile.
Do we do
the B-mobile?
To the B-mobile. Yeah,
okay.
You mean your Chevy?
Yes.
And of course, there is the finale. We got it.
No! The bee bit my bottom. No, my bottom big.
Anyways, the beekeeper.
Is our show becoming predictable?
I mean, yeah.
A lot of good bee material on the
Simpsons. A lot of bee material. Now, the beekeeper did his job. He got the bees off, and they rewarded him with a ceremonial
first. He got the bees off, dude.
He vacuumed them right up.
Yeah. He's a really energetic beekeeper. Really likes his job. He won't be allowed back at the stadium, I don't think. it was very, very graphic. A lot of children.
Now I know why you're a bee guy.
A lot of children crying. But he did the ceremonial first pitch at the end. So it was a really interesting thing that happened during the Canucks game and made me feel a little bit better last night while I was watching that game.
He's a hero now.
He is a hero.
Yeah, I don't even use the term big hero loosely.
The big jumbotron, even at the end, it said, "Thank you, bee guy."
Have you guys ever had been stung multiple times by a bee or wasp or anything like that? Had stepped on a nest or anything like that?
I have stepped on a nest, yes.
As a kid?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, as a fully grown adult.
No, well, it happens.
Yeah, it wasn't fun. And I'm terrified of bees, too, so that didn't help. I really am. I'm so scared of bees.
You are truly an 8-year-old.
Bees are scary. They sting.
Are you
they
one
buzz.
Of those guys that'll be like, "There's a bee over there. There's a bee over there."
Dude, I've told this before on the air. If I come home and there's a bee in my apartment,
oh, right.
It is now
right.
The bee's apartment. I just move.
You just give them the keys?
Yeah, it's yours. throw them through the bed, through the door, and just leave.
I forgot about that.
That delay at the D-backs game, you could have watched the entirety of Bee Movie. In that time.
That's
if
true.
You wanted to kill some time before the game starts.
Has anyone watched The Beekeeper with Jason Statham?
I haven't. You mentioned this. Is it good?
It's not. but I watched the whole thing. It is like, they're like, can we make something it's kind of like a John Wick thing, but it involves a guy who is a beekeeper.
Yeah.
Like they try and make this imaginary world of, you know, assassins and all that sort of stuff, but they're, you know, beekeepers and
yeah.
And it is we don't so the bee
how many
I can't even explain it. I can't even explain it. I bet a lot of people have watched it
John
because
Wick,
it's on Amazon Prime. They don't really explain much of the backstory.
As
like,
you would expect.
Like the beekeepers is this secret government organization that you know, they call in if they need something. Right. Like this. So it's like this, but they never really go into the whole backstory of how that agency was created anyway.
For Beekeeper 2.
Yeah, not for Beekeeper 2.
They'll delve
too.
Into
they'll
the
expand
back.
The lore. And
like
yeah.
I typically love Jason Statham movies and those types of movies. And when I saw it, I'm like, this is probably going to be awful, but I'm going to enjoy it. But while I was watching it, I was like, this is awful. And I am not enjoying
well,
it.
Well, Jason Statham's a safe bet usually because he's played the same role 50 mm-hmm. times. So if you go into a Jason Statham movie, you know what you're pretty much getting because he doesn't really do anything other than one very specific genre.
He's spent a lot of time in Vancouver because I think a lot of his movies have been filmed here. Did you also know that Jason Statham was a diver for, I guess, the United Kingdom or whatever it is for the Commonwealth Games? Something went by my Twitter scroll the other day. It was like
he was
this
a
old...
He was a member of Britain's national diving team.
Great Britain, yeah.
Yeah, for England right. At the 1990 Commonwealth Games.
Where were the 1990 Commonwealth Games?
1990 Commonwealth Games were in Henderson, New Zealand.
Right, okay. Yeah, I saw this video of like, here's a guy on the springboard and he looks like he's going to do a nice dive. And I was like, isn't that the beekeeper? Anyway, give us a mook out on that.
Okay. Here we go. Laddie, it's your time to shine.
Okay, so you guys, you know Randy Moeller, right? He's a color guy, I believe, for the Florida Panthers. He's on the
yep.
radio there.
Yep.
There was another Florida station, 560 WQAM, that had him on to discuss the Panthers' playoff run, and they wanted to talk about Bobrovsky, and you know, he was just nominated for that award. So let's hear how that conversation went.
We've been interested. Obviously, the goaltending has been fantastic this
both sides.
Season.
Oh yeah,
Sergei Bobrovsky is up for the Vezina Award.
The what?
The Vezina.
The Vezina? Okay.
What is that?
So there you have it, guys. Thatcher Demko could win the Vezina this year.
So who said that?
One of the hosts from WQAM.
That is, even A-Dog is like, that's a bad pronunciation.
Ooh, that's bad. Never going to recover from this financially.
Sergei Bobrovsky is up for the Vezina Award.
It's a tight race this year.
Oh, God.
What?
Oh, my God. I will never look at Vezina the same way.
He's ruined the word forever. In fact, they're scrapping the award.
Experience Vezina.
Gary Batman's like, we have to rename this thing. Yeah. I don't know what, but we can't call it that anymore.
Randy Mueller, you're not allowed anymore.
Can you play it one more time?
One more.
This both sides. Season, oh, yeah.
Sergei Bobrovsky is up for the Vezina Award.
There you go. Can I hear the whole thing? Can I hear the whole thing, including his reaction to it?
Okay, we'll play the whole thing from the start.
We've been interested. Obviously, the goaltending has been fantastic this
both sides.
Season.
Oh, yeah.
Sergei Bobrovsky is up for the Vezina Award.
The what?
The Vezina.
Yeah, I love
the Vezina. Okay.
What is that?
I love the what?
They give awards for that now.
I love when you can hear off microphone laughing that's so loud that it reaches the microphone. Yeah.
The what?
That was incredible. I've got a lot of jokes, but I also would like to keep my job.
That's right. At least until the playoffs are done.
An all-timer, though. I got to say, that's an all-time play.
You know what? It lived up to the hype. Laddie Mukowit. Okay, let's fire up the dot matrix, print out some humanoid submissions for what we learned. What we learned, as always, brought to you by Get Fire Plan. Protect what matters most with comprehensive fire safety plans. Monthly audits and risk mitigation at $200 off. Visit them at getfireplan.com.
Oh my God, we're having a fire!
Plan.
The winner.
There are a lot of texts coming in right now.
Good luck topping that one.
Yeah. Now what? I finally understand the Vezina monologues. Oh my God.
Not bad.
That's not bad, actually.
I like that. It's tasteful.
Yeah, it's tasteful.
It's like the only one we can read on the air.
Yeah, the rest of you are coming in with the things that we cannot read on the air.
Ah, classy.
Yeah.
Juan from Comox wins the $100 gift card to Primetime Bridge Brewing.
Bruff's gone. He's done.
Bruff is out. Bruff is out on what we learned. It's now just me. I am a solo host. What we learned from Juan in Comox, Ilya Mikheyev is the Canucks version of Eric Hurtado. All speed, no finish. That is the first Mikheyev to Hurtado comparison and the last Mikheyev to Hurtado comparison that you will ever hear. And it comes all the way from Comox and all the way from Juan. For those that don't remember.
You cannot make that joke in any other market. I don't even know if you can make it in this market, but imagine if you were like, you go to Edmonton even, and you're like, doesn't Mikheyev remind you of Eric Hurtado?
There are like five people on the planet that get that joke. Three of them are in the studio right now. Eric Hurtado, for those that forget, played over 100 games for the Vancouver Whitecaps, and fittingly, scored 12 times. So very Mikheyev-esque in terms of production, but it was the same thing. Lots of tools, just not the toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, you know, now that we're on the subject of old Whitecaps, who I thought were really going to be players, do you remember Kakuta Mane?
Yeah, yeah.
Same thing. Him and Hurtado. Everyone thought they were going to be something because they had all the tools.
Right.
No toolbox.
No. Well, does that mean just no finish or? Because all the tools
finish was a part of it.
Mane all
was
the tools, no toolbox often means to me like. To bring up is like that's Vertanen, right? Size, speed, strength, but like no idea what he's doing out there.
Right.
Mikheyev.
He has an idea.
Mikheyev knows what he's doing out there. He's just got no finish.
He's got no finishing tools.
Right. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
No sander.
Like no sanders. Yeah.
A total inability to sand. Anyway, congrats to Juan from Comox, longtime listener. Super deep cut. That wins you $100 to Primetime Bridge Brewing.
Unsigned, what we learned, BC Place might be installing permanent grass in preparation for the World Cup. Well, they'll definitely be putting grass in at some point. The question is whether they keep the grass afterwards. And also, I guess the question is when they might do that. The other news I guess we got is that there's going to be a new video board at BC Place. I always thought the video board that they put in there was like cool from the sides of the sidelines, but from the end zones, you're like, there sure is a lot of empty space there, right? Like it's weird. It has that whole area, which is just like nothing.
So they're going to get improved accessibility, which is good because it's not great getting into BC Place for big events.
Right.
Spectator areas and experiences, dedicated facilities for athlete and media.
I don't think that's exactly what accessibility means.
Yeah, I don't think that's...
Like, accessibility means that, like, you're able to get to places if you're, like, disabled
in a
or
wheelchair.
Something.
Oh,
like,
I thought I meant...
It's not like getting in the door.
I thought I meant additional entrances. Like, you know, accessibility to the building.
No.
Well, they could also do that. You know what? Put that on the list, FIFA. Put it on the list.
Right, okay.
And then, anyway, the whole point of running down the list of stuff was it's going to cost somewhere between $149 to $196 million.
I love reading the headlines. It's like, costs have gone up for major event. No kidding.
Yeah.
Boy, that never happens. I thought they'd get in under budget for this one.
Look at that, guys. We had tidy savings on this one.
Nobody ever profiteers when there's like a major event. People are usually like, let's do it for the good of society. We'll bring, you know what? We're going to do this for free. Free video for it.
Budget.
There we go.
Oh, we flagged this one earlier from basketball, Phil. Hashtag WWE, what we learned. You know that Pete Carroll would have challenged that call last night. He challenged literally everything, even when it was obvious that he shouldn't. Yeah, Pete was the riverboat gambler when it came to challenges. Mm-hmm. There would probably be people in his ear that, like, I don't think this one's going to work. And he's like, but it might work for me.
Yeah, Rick Tocchet, I heard, was a big poker player. Does he fold every hand?
It's a great question. I'm not even joking. It's a legitimate question.
Because like, does he ever just go with a big bluff?
Very risk averse.
They're super conservative. Now,
Tocchet's like, oh, the blinds are going up. I don't like this. It means I might have to play a hand.
I'm out. To paint the full picture, he has said on a number of occasions that he always defers to Crawford upstairs. Right? Mm-hmm. He's like, they make the call, and then it's their decision.
Yeah,
I trust those guys. So I'm assuming that was last night's decision, right?
Right.
Even though Tocchet said he thought it was 50-50, the ultimate decider was
And Crawford has had all his money in a savings account for his entire life.
My buddy said his favorite part of the review process now is when Mike Yeo puts two fingers up to the earpiece. He's like, hold on. We're not going to challenge you.
Talk is going to hear all this and just be challenging everything in game six. The Canucks are going to be shorthanded the whole game.
Let's drop the opening faceoff and talk it's challenging.
He's going to take it as a challenge. He's like, I am.
Justin and East Van, what we learned, the Brendan Batchelor stranglehold has been downgraded to a gentle neck massage.
Yeah.
Although I would really like to attend another Halbro watch party, I'm still hopeful the Canucks wrap up the series in six. Yeah, me too. Like I do not, as exciting as a game seven would be, I don't know if I'm ready for it. I don't know if I'm ready for it mentally. It would be really, really disappointing if the Canucks can't wrap this up in game six. And because it brings in the whole possibility of them, you know, losing game seven.
I am ready to get hurt again.
Game sevens are in no way exciting if you were up 3-1. They're exciting if you come back from a down 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're the team leading 3-1 and you're forced into a game seven, mm-hmm. that's just depressing, sad, and angering.
Remember 3-0 against Chicago, although that was a terrific
The ending, sure, but
finish.
Nobody was enjoying themselves leading up to that.
Yeah.
People were just like, oh, come on, really?
It was excruciating. That's the word.
Exactly.
Like watching that whole game was excruciating.
Very stressful.
And also, you know, look, let's be honest here. We're an honest show.
Yeah.
If the Canucks get the Oilers in the next round and they've got Casey DeSmith or Artur Seelovs in net and Petey's going the way he's going right now, I don't think anyone's really liking our chances of getting past the Oilers.
No, I mean, I've seen lots of texts to that effect.
But it would still be nice to get a series victory.
Absolutely.
You know, just just get this one done. That I think would go a long way for this group, you know, to be in this series, which is tough. The Preds are not going down without a fight. And I was actually surprised to hear from a few people on the Nashville side, like Adam Vingan, who I would consider on the Nashville side, although he works for Sportsnet. He covered the Preds for years for the Tennessean. Was like, I don't think there's going to be a game six. Like, they figured that the way that game four ended was such a crushing loss for the Preds that they would kind of sleepwalk into game five and the Canucks would take it. I just like steadfastly disagreed with that because, first of all, you've got a pretty smart coach in Andrew Brunette. You've got a leader like Ryan O'Reilly who has, you know, suffered painful losses and bounced back from them. Again, I've gone through that St. Louis run where they were down to Dallas and they won two in a row. They had a bad loss against San Jose and then they won three in a row. They lost game six at home to Boston and everyone was like, oh, I guess the Bruins are going to win the Stanley Cup on home ice. And then the Blues go in there and they beat the Bruins pretty soundly too in game seven. Like, you got a guy like that in the lineup, you're not going to roll over, especially the way the Preds have played in this series. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no reason why they shouldn't have been able to rally around the fact that, like, guys, like, I think we've been the better team so far. This team is, like, we're getting hits on Quinn Hughes. Pedersen's a non-factor. We can do this, guys.
Rafe with what we learned. Hashtag WWO, what we learned. Forsberg sure can sell a penalty. I didn't think so at first blush, but the Zadorov cross-check seemed a bit light, and certainly the Cole high stick was a sell job. I'm not saying the refs were bad. I'm not blaming them. I'm just saying Forsberg was theatrical.
The boy is coming for my job because during that play, he goes, he's 8 years old, and he goes, he's a faker. Oh. Look, he's out on the ice for the power play.
He was right.
You know? I was like, no, I think that was a cross check. And then I watched it. I'm like, the boy might be right.
I understand that
it was a dive.
I understand
it was gamesmanship.
Well, I think it was both, right? Yeah. It was a cross check.
Oh, he took advantage of it.
Plus,
you know what it was?
It.
Yeah. It was grabbing.
That was the right move.
It was
do.
Grabbing his back is what got, you know, because I was like, oh man, he's hurt. He got hit in the back with the shot.
He's got to make it look good, man.
And then you know, Tocchet hates a head snapper, right?
What about a back grabber?
Well, now he's got to hate a back grabber, too.
Can I read a text from Jeremy from Parksville?
Yes, absolutely.
He said, hey, guys, NHL should be reviewing the close calls. That definitely was worth a review. Should not be leaving it up to a challenge. I kind of agree. Like, why does it come down to this sort of game within the game that Tocchet has to play when it really should be about getting the call right?
I mean, that is part of it, that it does add an element to the coaching. Right, I mean that's part.
Why?
Of
it. Like, should the bottom line not be let's get the call?
Because it's an entertainment product, I guess. If you wanted the easy answer, I mean the NFL's done it with their challenge. You get to win another challenge. Like if you get them all right, you can win an extra one. You get a bonus challenge, right? I mean that's why they're punitive as well. Is it's designed to be a game within the game? Like it's intentional.
Kind of silly.
Why though? We're here to be entertained.
Like I said, it's about getting the call right at the
end
of
the day.
You
get a chance as a coach to show if you're good or bad at it, right?
Well, like Taka said, and most of these calls are 50-50 anyway, so why?
That's the beauty of gambling.
It's just whether you have an aggressive coach or not is what it comes down to.
Surrey Ryan with what we learned. It feels like we're scratching and clawing to get past the Preds just to get bombed by the Oilers in round two. Yeah, I mean, we talked about that a little bit. But first of all, you never know.
It's true.
You never know in a series. But also, you know, if you believe the whole theory that you need to go into the playoffs and learn a few lessons and then maybe a few years later it pays off with the championship, getting past the Nashville Predators and then even if you do lose to the Oilers, hopefully you'll have learned some lessons along the way. You know, I was listening to Yannick Hansen on the station yesterday and he was saying that the lessons you learn in the playoffs, it's almost unavoidable that you have to learn them sometimes the hard way. And I'm thinking about a guy like Nils Höglander, who we were all very impressed with this season. And it feels to me like he's just trying to, he doesn't really know what to do out there.
What do you say you do
right now,
here, Nils?
And I think he's, It looks to me like he's kind of nervous with the puck.
That line looks very disconnected. You know how Tocchet loves connected hockey? Mm-hmm. Those three, like I was like, oh, by the way, McKayev doesn't have any chemistry with Hoglander either. Like they did a couple things last night where
they're always apart.
Yep.
You know, like they're never supporting the puck. They're never supporting each other. Like this guy's got the puck. Well, he's going to get checked, but don't worry that this guy's behind him and he's going to follow up on that puck.
Individually, sometimes you see them out there. They have good ideas individually.
Individually.
Collectively, those ideas never mesh.
I also think that sometimes it's a tell when guys are struggling when early in the game, they're just like, this isn't always the case because Miller does this too, but sometimes early in the game, they're just going to be like, I'm going to go out there and get hits. You know, Petey did that in a game earlier in the series, and I think Hoglander did it, I think, last game. Mm-hmm. All these games are meshing together because they all look the same. Now, I'm not saying that – don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that's the wrong thing to do, but sometimes when you're struggling, your brain just goes to, I'm just going to go out there and run some guys and hope that, you know, something good comes of it. Hopefully it gets me into the game or something along those lines. Or you're thinking, I got to do something to help my team. And right now, it's not my puck handling or playmaking, so I'm just going to go run some guys over.
Well, we're getting to that point in the series because I looked it up earlier. The Preds have 11 different goal scorers in this series right now after last night. Mm-hmm. You know how many different guys have scored for the Canucks in this series?
Besser, is that it?
Six. Six guys have scored goals.
Oh, yeah, because Lindholm scored.
Besser, Joshua, Lindholm, Zadorov, Miller, Suter. That's it.
Yeah, and Suter could have multiple goals.
Yeah, so you don't have a goal from Hoglander yet, and that's an issue. You don't have a goal yet from Pettersson, and that's an issue. You know,
have we talked about Pettersson on the show though? Like,
we should focus on him a little bit more.
Right. Okay.
You've got one goal from the blue line. Sorry, two goals from the blue line. They're both from Zadorov, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like
after the season the Canucks have had, it'd be very disappointing if they didn't at least win a round. Like that's where I'm at with it. Like,
well,
they need to win a round. Otherwise, it's like really all that for this.
Do you remember when we were trying to set expectations for the playoffs and we said you kind of have to see how the series plays out before you can say yes, I was satisfied with that, or no, I wasn't satisfied with that. If the Canucks lose this series, I think we can all officially say we were not satisfied with that.
No, they should. They should be able to close this out. And if they don't, it's very disappointing.
Yeah. Mike and Burnaby with What We Learned. Let's finish on a positive.
Yeah.
Mike and Burnaby with What We Learned. Call it a hot take, but with the performance he's putting in and the style of play, if they lock up Zadorov long term, he could be the kind of guy that ends up in the Ring of Honor. Fan favorite for sure. I wonder...
They got to re-sign him, man.
I wonder if they are thinking now seriously about signing a guy like Zadorov.
Sorry, Hronik. See ya.
Hronik, you are
what have you done for me lately?
Yeah, you're out of here.
Yeah, Hronik, you are now super dude.
Yeah.
Did you see his agent, Alan Walsh, was at Rogers Arena last night?
Yeah. Well.
Playoff coverage on Sportsnet.
He's like, does Zadorov have an agent?
Playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Sky Avenue Kitchen and Lounge. Discover Surrey's newest luxury dining experience. Experience the richness of Canadian cuisine prepared by a Michelin-recommended chef. Reserve your table today at skyavenue.com. We got to get out of here for today, but we will be back tomorrow. Signing off, I have been Mike Halford. He's been Jason Brough. He's been A-Dog. He's been Laddie. And he's been intern Zach. This has been the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Sergei Bobrovsky is up for the Vezina Award. The what?